we are here today with David and Laura Henrich. We're so blessed to have them as our new partners in ministry at St. John's, and more so as just new residents of Salisbury and Rowan County. They hail from other parts of the world. I'm going to let them tell you all about that. But thank you all for joining us today in this little conversation with these very special folks. Laura's here with me. David's here with me. Their two kids are across the street at the CDC. So
that's right.
We've just created this one little happy neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Laura, welcome.
Yes.
I'm so glad that you're a part of St. John's staff. I mean, I hope you've heard that a lot.
Yes.
But we are so blessed to have you as part of this ministry. And David, welcome to you too.
It's nice to piggyback off that.
Piggyback. I mean, if you have to be here, that's it's a decent place for you to be too, right?
I appreciate the moment. No, it's good to be here. Thank you.
We're going to ask you some questions just to get to know you a little bit, because we know that folks are eager to hear some of your story. And I think the easiest place to begin is just to tell us where you hail from, where you come from, what you consider sort of your home base. Who'd like to begin?
Oh, I can go first.
Go.
I don't
mind.
Okay. So, from Fargo, North Dakota, been there my whole life, lived there my whole life. Hockey took up most of my childhood. Every year we get big floods in, every year we get big blizzards in. And so there's this routine that you get naturally is you have the school year, you have flood season, and then you get through summer, and then you go back to hockey season. And that's kind of the normal progression up in Fargo. Mm-hmm. And that's home for me. It's where the family's from.
So you haven't ventured outside of North Dakota much at all.
Before I met Laura, the furthest south I'd ever been was South Dakota.
And they were the Southerners, huh?
So they were the Southerners, and then we were the Southerners to Canada. There you go. So I've always been a Southerner, and now I'm even more of a Southerner in North Carolina.
That's
so there you
awesome.
Go.
Well, great. Welcome. Yeah. Laura, how about you?
Thanks. Yeah. I was born in Madison, Wisconsin, as my dad was finishing up some of his education. And from there, when I was going into first grade, we moved down to Knoxville, Tennessee. So I lived there the rest of my through high school and my first 2 years in college. Mm-hmm. So that's my home base and where I consider to be from. Although I do have what I call Packer roots.
Mm, so. Because of Wisconsin.
Because of Wisconsin.
So you've always been a Packer fan.
Yes.
And your husband?
Oh, yeah.
So that was convenient.
Huh? Absolutely. My parents were scared when I moved up to Minnesota, North Dakota, that I was going to marry a Viking fan. But I found the only Packer person in Fargo.
You got to have at least one Super Bowl ring. To be a fan. That's kind of my requirement, at least.
Is that right?
Yeah. The Vikings, they'll get there someday. They won't. They just won't. You got to be a Packers fan.
He says that with a great smile on his face. Yeah. Now, you also grew up at St. John's, but St. John's in Knoxville.
Yep.
Yeah. Tell us about, because I know that was an important part of your life. Tell us about your church.
Yeah. So when my dad was born and raised Catholic and my mom was born and raised Baptist. And when we were still in Wisconsin, they were trying to figure out a church that worked for both of them. And that ended up being a Lutheran church. When we moved down to Knoxville, it was a little bit of a challenge because there's not many Lutherans in Knoxville, Tennessee. And so we ended up kind of going around to a bunch of different places, and we found our home at St. John's. I think that we joined when I was in about fourth grade, and that ended up being a really pivotal part of my journey and my faith journey, but also just my life journey and figuring that out. St. John's is located in downtown Knoxville, kind of like our St. John's is. And within a 5-block radius, there was 6 social ministries that were going on. So every week when we went to church, we got to see our neighbors and to encounter them as well. And through that, just helping me learn what being the church was, not inside those walls, but what it looked like outside of those walls as well. We would leave and there would be, we would have to pass people and be in conversation with people. And that really shaped and formed who I was as a Christian and throughout my life. So
I think that's that's well said. Because, I mean, the little that I know of St. John's in Knoxville is it's a beautiful church, mm-hmm. but it is in and it's downtown,
yep.
but it's in sort of a tough part of downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And so the church takes and has always taken traditional worship very seriously. It's mm-hmm. a beautiful place for worship, but it's also taken its neighborhood very seriously. I mean, you have a bridge under which like 30, 40, 50 homeless folks live just right down the road from yes. the church, right?
Yep. And that's, I mean, the Knox Area Rescue Ministry is right there. Salvation Army is right there. And then there's a day shelter as well.
Mm-hmm.
But under the bridge now are tents as that goes. And we always would say that people joined St. John's and came to St. John's not out of convenience, but out of commitment.
Mm.
And so I got to be raised with a group of people who were committed to a certain area and being Christ's hands and feet in that mm-hmm. area as well.
That's great. So that really did form you. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of the question. Now I'll ask David, because that clearly formed your ministry. I mean, you have a passion for that level of engagement with the neighborhood and community and also for worship.
Yeah.
That's good. David, how did North Dakota form you?
Wow. So, you know, this sense of community is something that Laura and I share together. When we would have flood season, you're sandbagging your house, your neighbor's house. You're getting in buses with other people, getting sent to random rural farms to help them sandbag. So growing up, it was just expected, you know, you're going to go in after school, no matter, you know, what age group, high school, junior high, whatever, and you'll leave school, get on a bus, and you're going to go sandbag. And that's going to count as school credits. So I grew up with this sense of, you know, you help the person next to you, and it could be someone you don't know. You show up and help. And that's, I kind of took that as like a path moving forward in my life. And going with that, the older I got, the more I saw how that can help people in larger areas. So not just during flood season. How do you help people in day-to-day of life? Mm-hmm. How does just caring for another person impact that person's life, and how does that move on?
Mm-hmm.
So that sense of community, and that's where I found my church at.
Mm-hmm.
With my parents being divorced, there were always different churches depending mm-hmm. on where we lived.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have like a home church,
mm-hmm.
but I had a home community.
Mm-hmm.
So that's mm-hmm. where I found my outreach and my calling.
Mm-hmm.
So, and now that we're here, now that things are finally slowing down, I can start trying to figure out how do I fit in here
mm-hmm.
in that
mm-hmm.
same
mm-hmm.
capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, with North Dakota, you know, if it's not flood season, it's winter, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to go to work and you want to pay your bills, you're going to be up early. You're going to shovel. You're going to shovel the neighbor's, you know, driveway for them. And there's always this sense of helping each other out, and it builds resiliency in you.
Mm-hmm.
Is what I think. So
that is like the best answer you could have given. Thank you. I love that. that's pretty cool. Well, you, when you met Laura, were a professional bartender.
Yeah.
Something that a lot of folks may know or may not know.
Absolutely.
But I love that part of sort of your story and the way that that connected. I mean, bartenders and preachers, it just makes sense that the two are yoked together. Tell us why that makes sense.
So there's the joke, and then there's the more
serious
yeah, side.
Yeah.
So the joke is we both serve communion, and we will both listen to confession. You
That's
know, right?
Very true.
And I suppose depending on which religion confession falls in, but I would always joke when we get that question back up north. You know, I kick people out Saturday night to send them to Laura Sunday morning, and so then we get our numbers up. You know, yeah. That was the whole thing. But really, once you get into professional bartending, you're not there to be a customer yourself. You're there to actually listen. Your job is to maintain boundaries. Your job is to listen. And your job is to know how to curb problems ahead of time. And then how do you do that in a politically correct way and a graceful way? You know, I think that's about all the connections between a pastor and a bartender there can be, but that has to be the connection between the two professions there, or callings. But
yeah, I think that as a bartender, you get to know your clients as well, too. That there's people that would come to you because they knew you, they trusted you, and they loved you, that you let them into parts of their life, and they let you into parts of theirs as well. And so the relationship aspect of bartending and of being a pastor go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's well said. The now, bartending in North Dakota is a little different than bartending down in the South. So what's the...
So since North Dakota is such a rural place, or rural state, everything that you need for a city is three things. You need a stop sign, you need a church, and you need a bar. So Saturday night, like I said, you might go to the bar when you're done with the farm, and then you go to church the next day, and then, you know, that's your city. The stoplight, the church, and the bar are surrounded by farms, but they're everywhere, and there's always those two things, no matter how small or how big the town is. And even during ice fishing season, they'll push out these little ice homes, and one will be a bar, one will be a church, and people will just stay out there fishing all through, you know, winter. And it's just, it's hilarious. It was growing up and seeing that was just hilarious. Yeah. But yeah, you need the two to be called a city in North Dakota. That's a requirement.
Pretty basic up there, huh?
It's very basic, yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
Although Fargo is the big city in North Dakota.
With 100,000 people, it's the biggest city in North Dakota. Yeah. So if you're from Fargo, you're only from Fargo. Everyone else in North Dakota will say you're not from North Dakota. Mm-hmm. You have to be from outside of Fargo. Mm-hmm. But yeah, but it's, you know, it was very interesting growing up there, and I wouldn't change that at all.
That's great. Well, you all have a new clan here. You've welcomed a new baby into your family.
Yes.
It's probably rocked Eliana's world a little bit.
Yeah.
Your 2-year-old little girl.
Mm-hmm. And ours.
And oh, yeah. Little girl. So your transitions included moving to, accepting a call in December or November, whenever you accepted the call.
Yeah.
And then moving to North Carolina in January, getting to know this congregation, finding a home, trying to look for a job for David, having a baby in early March, right?
Yeah.
On maternity leave for, I don't know, 10 weeks or so, and then returning to St. John's, placing your kids in the CDC and starting back to work again. It's a lot of transition. And then David's working for Del Hayes now, right?
Yep.
It's a lot of transition.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
How's it going?
The transition is finally starting to feel like we're getting our feet under us. It was amazing to come into a place where we immediately felt so loved and so welcomed here. That was a huge help for both David and I in that transition, to have people surrounding us and loving us without really knowing us yet. Always offering, if you go into labor, we can watch Eliana. So those things we didn't have to worry about as much, kind of just being engulfed by the community. But as far as the transition from one to two kids, I think that, you know, everybody says have two kids, it'll be fun. And if that's fun, sure.
You're not sure you define it as fun yet. Huh?
I always say that the first 6 months of having a kid is a haze. Like with Eliana, I didn't feel like I came out of that haze until the 6-month point. And then I was like, oh, this is great. This is so much fun. So we're kind of living in a little bit of the sleep deprived haze right now. But Eliana, with the transition here, was hard for her. But she loves her baby brother. And so that's one thing that we're thankful for. That transition went really well for our kid who doesn't transition well.
Mm-hmm.
But all the other little transitions she has hard times with. So,
right. So, I mean, so the first 6 months haze, you are absolutely correct about that. That's true. And also, you know, having the second kid, you know, everyone says have a second kid, it's fun. But then they also say have the third kid, because after you have the second kid, it doesn't even matter. So now we know they're lying both times. So it's like we got to up our game with organization and scheduling, especially me on that part.
Uh-huh.
But the good times always outweigh the bad times. But man, it's just been great. It's been a ride. It has been a ride between us transitioning here and transitioning with the second child. Thankfully, we have a lot of the hand-me-downs left over for the second kid. Yeah. But she likes playing with her brothers, so once we do get the transitions between, like, playtime and bath time, you know, she'll play with her brother, no problem. She likes her brother. She'll hug him. But then when we switch to the next thing, you know, that's a little uphill battle. But, you know, you get through them. You get through them.
And she can't say her V's, so it's Ebbet. Ebbet John.
That's right, Ebbet.
Which I think is adorable.
Right.
Well, I know just from observing you two, you're great parents, and you're very, you probably don't feel patient and loving all the time, but you sure come across that way.
We fooled you. No.
What happens behind closed doors? Right. You never know.
Oof.
But it's not. It's certainly not easy, but it is a blessing.
Absolutely.
You gave up your snowblower when you moved to North Carolina.
That's correct.
What else did you give up?
Oh, man, that's a list.
That looks like a sleeping bag.
Yeah.
That looks like a sleeping bag.
Gave that away very, very fast. So.
Laura, I think, was more eager than me to start giving up this stuff. In fact, not only the snowblower, but the shovel. And she's like, you won't need the shovel when we move down here. I said, okay, well, you know. So we get down here, and it's snowing.
Mm-hmm.
First week we're here, it snows a few times. And so I had my big North Dakota shovel that I'm used to shoveling with. You know, I had gotten rid of that, and I went to Lowe's, and I bought the child's
shovel.
Shovel.
Child's shovel.
The $18.99 special, going to break after 20 minutes, shovel. And that was fun. That was exciting. But also, I felt bad because when we moved, I was wearing a t-shirt the whole time, and I kept getting looks from people, and I had to start wearing a coat just so I quit getting looks from people. Because, you know, it's like negative 20-something in Fargo, and it's like 30 degrees here, and I'm like, man, this is great. I'm loving North Carolina already.
Right. Sunshine,
right?
Warmth.
And I'm that weird neighbor wearing a t-shirt in the middle of winter, so I had to change that a little bit.
My guess is it was a Packers t-shirt.
You know, yeah.
Or an NDSU Bison t-shirt.
NDSU. Both green.
They're both
turns,
green and, and gold.
Yeah.
So.
Interchangeable.
Exactly.
But now we have Carson Wentz up in Philadelphia, you know, being the quarterback for the Eagles. So now that's a...
Now you're a
fan. You're known.
They're number two, you know. You got to go Packers. And then I'll root for Carson Wentz when he's playing.
Carson Wentz played for North Dakota State.
Yeah, he was the quarterback 4 years, four championships, so...
Mm-hmm.
And he actually came to our church that we were at back in Fargo. You got to meet him, Laura.
Yeah, to connect faith and sports.
Yeah.
So.
What did you give up on your trip down here?
It's more, what did you get back?
Yeah.
No, tell me what you gave up.
So
you have to, whenever you leave someplace, you always give up something.
Right. There, I had been at the congregation I was in for 3.5 years. And that really just feels like you start to scratch the surface of some place.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the hardest thing is that I left when one of our parishioners was pretty sick, knowing that in the next month or so she was going to die. And giving up those relationships is hard because you invest your time and your life and this is my job and you invest into that, knowing that you can't be there in the same way for those people that you were as their pastor, and you're also 2,000 miles away from that, or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think that was one of the big things that I gave up, was being comfortable in a congregation, knowing the flow of it, to move somewhere else as well. And then the friendships that you leave behind in a place are always, I'm an incredibly relational person. So I look at all of those things that I left behind.
Well, it's hard to leave. I mean, especially a place that you love.
Yep.
We identified that early on in our interview process, that you are very relational in your ministry, and that's certainly something we were looking for. So we're sorry that it hurts to leave, but I'm glad that it hurts to leave. You know what
right.
I mean by that?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good thing. I'm not sure we'd be looking for someone who was like chomping at the bit to get away from those people.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Although I guess maybe that happens too. Yeah. Hey, listen, you've just told us before we started this beautiful story of being able to share with your daughter the stories of faith for the very first time. Yeah. First time her ears have ever heard these stories. And it's what a precious time that is. So the last question, mm-hmm. do you have any favorite Bible stories that you're telling her these days?
Yes. So Eliana's favorite Bible story at this point is Jonah and the Big Fish. And we have one of the many Bibles that I have for her is it's called the Rhyme Bible, and it makes every story rhyme. And so it has this really nice cadence to it. But anytime I open up that one, there's a picture on the front of Jonah and the Big Fish, and she points to that one. So we'll go read it. And the way that she interprets and sees things, to see the Bible through her eyes is one of the things that I've loved most about being a parent to a toddler. And there's the phrase that says, uh-oh, Jonah, you should have gone to Nineveh. And now when I ask Eliana, I'll say, uh-oh, Jonah, you should have gone to, and she'll go, Nineveh, and in her little toddler way. Mm-hmm. And so I think that it just brings a new life to those stories as well. So
that's, I love that. I mean, of course, that's your favorite story this week. Next week, it'll be a different story altogether.
Well, right now, we're kind of picking up on Fruits of the Spirit, too. Okay. So we have a child's book that talks about that. Maybe God is like that, too. And it's where a little kid in a big city sees love and joy and peace and patience. And it goes through each one of them and how he sees that in his day. And David and I both mm-hmm. love reading that book to her and saying, maybe God is like that too. So the faithfulness of a grandmother who washes dishes every night. And
I actually like reading that book too. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that book was out there. And mm-hmm. once we started reading it, I was like, okay, this is perfect. This mm-hmm. is another way to look at this too. And I mm-hmm. loved it. Yeah,
it's
I love it.
Good for you.
Yeah. It's good for me personally. Yeah, too, because it takes the story into a different angle. So I can relate to that a little more too.
Well, the parent is the first and always the best teacher of faith. So that's what you're living into right now. And these are incredible opportunities for her and eventually for Everett to learn what God looks like through you all. Mm-hmm. And certainly these stories of faith will, we hope and pray, be stories that will be long-lasting and just be placed and rooted in their hearts forever and ever. Well done, good and faithful servants. We're glad to have you all here. I mean, we really are. What a blessing to be in ministry together and to have you in this community.
Thank you.
All right. Well, until next time, thanks for joining us.